Welcome to episode 31 of Unapologetically Overcoming. I'm your host, Jess Marie. On today's episode, my guest will be talking about what it means to be anti-racist. He is currently working for the private and public sectors, businesses, organizations, and nonprofits, helping them with strategic planning, training, facilitation, and writing. He has over 30 years of experience in diversity, equity, and inclusion, media, communications, and training fields. I encourage you all to listen to this episode wherever you are with your journey and knowledge as it relates to anti-racism. All right. My guest today is here to talk about an extremely important topic. It's something that I'm very passionate about. And I'm very excited and grateful that he is joining me today for this conversation. I am going to turn it over to him and let him introduce himself to everyone and tell us all a little bit about who he is and what he does. Welcome. Thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thank you for having me. Yes, my name is Kevin P. Henry, and currently I live in the Seattle area. And originally I'm from Los Angeles, and I moved up to Seattle in 1988, and pretty much have been here the entire time, except for a five-year period when my wife and I lived in Honolulu, which has much nicer weather than Seattle most of the time.
Yeah, but I can imagine.
Anyway, we're back in the Seattle area. And so originally I started out in college as a communications major, but I had the good fortune to start working for some newspapers in the Los Angeles area while I was still in college. So my background really is rooted in journalism and in media. And then eventually I kind of worked in entertainment PR for a while. And so I got into kind of the public relations marketing part of things. And then I just kind of got burned out on LA. So I moved to Seattle and got pretty much immediately kind of thrust into the whole diversity, equity, and inclusion realm. And so ever since, I'd say 1994, when I worked for the city of Bellevue and wound up staying there 20 years as their diversity, equity, inclusion manager, that's pretty much been my life, journalism and then DEI.
That's awesome. That's amazing work. I applaud anyone and everyone that does work in that area. So thank you for doing that. I know there's still some people that aren't familiar with what DEI actually is. Can you explain that a little bit for people who might not know?
Yeah. Well, thank you. And first of all, I want to say that the letters get all moved around a lot. So you hear DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion. You hear diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging.
Mm.
Sometimes I hear EDI, equity, diversity, and inclusion. So it's pretty much all the same thing. It's yeah. Really about, you know, take the word diversity, for instance, is about the fact that no one has the same DNA. You know, we all bring a host of lived experiences and background and perspectives, gender identities, racial, religious. You know, we're a very, very diverse world. And so what we really try to focus on in my work is really embracing that as opposed to being afraid of it. So if somebody says, oh, you know, I grew up on the East Coast and I'm of this ethnic background and you're from a different background, we want people to move toward each other, begin conversations to learn about each other. And it's extremely relevant, especially in the last 3 or 4 years, with all the kind of racial turmoil and unrest and that's been happening in the country, that it's even more important to really get to know people so that we don't wind up falling victim to stereotypes and things yes. like that. And yes. fear, because fear, yeah. I think, drives a lot of racism, for instance. The Absolutely. Equity part is that, you know, there's a difference between equality and equity. You know, equality is that it's, for me, it usually means equal access. I mean, you can come to the same school, you can live in the same neighborhood, but I can open a bank account. Now, if you open a bank account with $20,000 in it, you have way more equity than if I open it with $50. So we just have to be aware that we can't just stop at saying, okay, you're diverse and we want you to work for our company. Well, there's more to it than that. You know, we need to know what are some special needs you have. What are some things that, some barriers that you might come up against within an organization that we aren't even aware of? And so that we might have to adjust our mission statement, or we might have to do other things in order to target you in a positive way, so that we say, okay, Jess, you know, given your lived experience and the problems maybe you've had in moving into this region of the area, let's work with you to really make sure that you feel belong here, that you feel included mm-hmm. and respected. So the equity is really drilling down and treating people as individuals and their lived experiences. The inclusion part is, it's an interesting word, because in some ways people will say, well, you know, I invited Jess to the party and I, you know, we include everybody. But again, just because you invite me to work at your company or invite me to your party doesn't mean I feel like I belong.
Right.
You know, once I get to the party and nobody talks to me, well, you've included me, yeah. but you aren't actually being inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that kind of.
Yeah, no, it definitely did. And there were so many things that stood out to me as you were explaining that, because I mean, all of it is important, but understanding two of the things that you just said, specifically related to the fear and mm-hmm. how that plays a role in racism. But I also think too, just misunderstanding, because so many people think that they have an idea about certain things and they really don't. So the fear coupled with the not knowing really mm-hmm. amplifies some of those negative, you know, thoughts, feelings, oh, sure. perceptions, ideas about people who are different than us. So it's really important for people to understand that, because, you know, learning and listening and educating yourself every day really can open up your mind to a world of amazing things. You know, not just this topic, but kind of across the board.
Well, and on top of it, I think it allows you to look at yourself and examine mm-hmm. yourself, because we all have our own biases. We all have our own lens that we look at the world through. And sometimes I guess what will happen is it'll make me stereotype someone, because right. I'm thinking, and like you said, if I don't know, for instance, you know, what it's like to grow up in the South, I might have all kinds of stereotypes based yes. on very limited knowledge.
Yeah.
You know, because we have, if you've lived in a little bubble all your life and there's people all around you in different parts of the country from different backgrounds, mm-hmm. maybe your only exposure is watching a TV show.
Right.
Or maybe you met one person from a particular racial background, and then you mm-hmm. say, well, I met this one Black person, and so therefore that right. Black person represents all Black people.
Yeah.
You know, which is why I particularly get upset when people use this colorblind excuse. Well, I'm colorblind. Mm-hmm. I just treat everybody the same. Yeah. And I said, well, it's really easy when you're 90% of your world, everybody's mm-hmm. like you. And maybe you have, you know, have an Asian friend, you have a gay friend, you have a Black friend, yeah. you know, well, reverse that.
Yeah.
You know, if you were the minority and you lived your life, you know, day to day, where people were kind of eyeballing you, you know, and jumping to conclusions about you based on limited knowledge. So we really just need to be open with each other.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, we both know that that's a hard thing for some people to do, which is unfortunate, because like I said, when you open yourself up to new people, new places, new experiences, new information, it really is, it's amazing. It's impactful. It not only for yourself, but like for other people too, because when you're more open, you know, you see things differently and you can help other people kind of realize maybe how they're not seeing things that way. So, you know, it really is powerful.
Well, and like I said, we are all subjected to our own biases. I mean, mm-hmm. I have them. I mean, I have to yeah. check myself, and some of it's just more of a defense mechanism. I know yep. for a lot of people of color, you know, a lot of times we're in the minority. I mean, Black people make up what, 13% of the whole population in the mm-hmm. US. And there's other times when I can go literally days if I'm in certain parts of the country and not see another Black person. So yeah. if I see, for instance, someone with a white guy with long hair driving a pickup truck, listening to country music, I might get this stereotype in my head of like, yeah. oh, this is not somebody I yeah. can really relate to.
Mm-hmm.
But then I know white people that are like that, and they're the opposite right. of that. But if I right. just it on my own stereotype mm-hmm. of, oh, that means this person is a, I don't know, you know, super conservative, redneck, whatever you want to call it. That's yeah. not fair until I really get to know them.
Yep. Yep. It's so important for people to recognize that, because like you said, we all have them, even if we don't realize we have biases, we do. Oh, sure. And that's a great example, because I mean, we're all guilty of doing things like that, whether it's, you know, how a person looks, what they're wearing, you know, what they're eating, what kind of music they listen to, mm-hmm. what kind of car they're driving, like pick anything like that. And people can, you know, automatically think one thing when it could be completely wrong.
Absolutely.
So a lot of the work that you do is related to anti-racism. Can you explain what it means to be anti-racist?
Yes, thank you for that question. So a lot of people will say, well, I'm not racist, and that's great. I'm not racist. You know, I treat everybody the same and, you know, as individuals, and that's great. But there's a lot of, whether or not a lot of people want to accept it, there's a lot of racism in the country. Mm-hmm. You know, it pops up in different ways. It's not always obvious. I think that's the thing that that throws people off, is when you say, well, that's a racist situation. And they go, well, what do you mean? The person didn't say anything. I said, how many times have you known someone, worked with someone, and you say, you know, I just get the feeling Jess really doesn't like me. And they might say, well, what did Jess say? I said, well, Jess didn't say anything. But it's like the way her body language, the way she doesn't show up to my meetings, you know, mm-hmm. the little snide comments, the little jokes yeah. that she makes. There's all kinds mm-hmm. of microaggressions that people yeah. commit. And so a lot of people will say, okay, I'm not racist. And that's great. But what are you doing to combat or stand up to racism? Mm-hmm. Anti-racism underscores the word being active. You know, what mm-hmm. are you doing? It's kind of like the difference between sitting in the stands and watching a game and rooting on your team, or being uh-huh. down on the field where you can actually make a difference. Yep. Because if you're, unless you're anti, you're not really changing anything. You're just saying, well, I'm not participating in whatever, you know, I don't yep. beat my kids. My neighbor does, but I don't beat my kids and I don't right. beat his kids. But yeah. what are you doing to stop your neighbor from beating his kids?
Yep.
So
yep.
it's very easy just to go be very passive. Mm-hmm. But anti just means you're doing something, and that can, you can do many different things. You don't have to go march out in the streets. There's just all kinds of ways you can promote anti-racism.
Yeah. And just those little things, whether people realize it or not, they do make a difference, you know, because little things can have a ripple effect and, you know, make a bigger impact.
Well, I use a lot of medical analogies. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of infections start off very small.
Yes.
You know, but if you don't treat them and address them and you choose to ignore them, they turn into major infections, and then you start losing limbs and body parts yeah. and things. So yeah. a lot of times people might hear a racist comment, for instance, or a sexist comment or whatever, and they don't say anything. Mm-hmm. Well, if you don't say anything, suppose your children are there and your children yeah. say, oh, well, that person said, just said this comment, and my dad didn't do anything, didn't say anything. Mm-hmm. So I guess it's okay. So yeah. I guess I can go say it. Mm-hmm. You know, and how many times have kids come to school, for instance, yes. said something, you know, well, where did you hear that? Little six-year-olds using racial slurs. Well, that's what my dad says all the time.
Right. Yeah.
So there's that ripple effect. And if yes. nobody addresses it, then the kid grows up to be an adult thinking it's okay mm-hmm. to treat people or look at people a certain way.
Yeah. I talk about that so much because, you know, it's so crazy with the world of, you know, the internet and social media and all that stuff these days, how downright terrible we see grownups being to one another. And then we wonder why our children are being so terrible to one another. And it's exactly because of what you just said. They're modeling what they're seeing. They're modeling what they're hearing. So if they're around their parents or, you know, other people in their lives on a regular basis who are saying things and doing things and nobody is calling them out on them, on those things and correcting them, then they're obviously going to just perpetuate all of that. And you know, it's never going to change. So yeah, that's so important.
Well, and fortunately, people are getting called out. I mean, there's teachers that have been suspended. Just this last couple of weeks, there's been a teacher that's been suspended. There's been a broadcaster yep. that was fired from a major league baseball team.
Yes.
There's been some police officers in California where they mm-hmm. They found some texts, some really racist texts that the officers were sharing with each other. And that's the other thing, is that and I'm not being negative about police. I mean, there's some great police. I think most of them are great, but there are, but you are expecting an officer to be someone you call to protect you, not to harbor these feelings that you are an inferior person, but you don't necessarily know that. So there's coaches, there's judges, there's these people in positions of power that are harboring racist feelings. And so once you detect that, you really need to bring it out into the open and address it. Otherwise, it's like that silent infection.
Yes, yes, absolutely. That's so true. So I'm sure that this list is a million miles long, but if you could pick out a few, what are some of the stigmas that you think are related to being anti-racist or, you know, teaching anti-racism? What are some of the things that you have heard or encountered yourself with that work?
Well, and so in terms of negative kinds of stigma, people are making disparaging comments. Well, first of all, the long list. Well, one is that by talking about this, you're being divisive. You're separating people. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's okay. So, or by teaching history, for instance, that's real topical right now. Well, don't bring that stuff up that happened 200 years ago, because people get upset and uncomfortable and guilty, and you're dividing people. It's called history. It's the truth.
Yeah, so, it happened.
So it happened. And so if you don't want to teach all of history, then just don't bother teaching it, because then it becomes propaganda, because you're just mentioning all the good stuff. You know, and then the other thing is that there's so much history that's been ignored, suppressed, diminished, and erased, that there's, especially like with Native Americans, there's so much I've learned in the last couple of years about what's happened with the boarding schools. And
I know.
You know, so many atrocities. And you know, it's bad. I said, but at the same time, you need to teach your children that, as well as why they should go to see Mount Rushmore.
Right.
You know, there's so many misconceptions. And so without that knowledge, people become very biased and very ignorant in a lot of ways. So that's one way, is teaching your kids. If your kids turn on the TV and see a Black Lives Matter protest going on, don't change the channel, because they're going to go, well, why are these people so upset? And if you say, oh, well, we're going to, let's go watch some cartoons.
Yeah.
You know, some people want to protect. So they'll say, you know, it's being divisive. It's, you know, you're too obsessed with color. Well, every time I turn on a new, you know, I turn the news, I could turn on right now and hear about some racist incident that came out of the blue, people getting shot through the front door for knocking on the door. I said, so we talk about it. It's easy not to talk about crime if you don't have any crime in your neighborhood, but in some neighborhoods, crime is an everyday occurrence. So there's that. Then there's the whole woke thing. And woke originally was a term used by Black people 100 years ago in order to just say, hey, if you're going to go drive through Alabama in the 1930s by yourself, you need to stay woke. That's it. That's how it started. Now it's, people use it as anytime you mention anything about, it could be gay rights, social justice, any of those things. Oh, you're just one of those woke people. They kind of lump it all together, and then they dismiss it. As it's an excuse not to talk about anything, because, well, Jess, you're just being woke, and you know how those woke people are. So those are just some of the examples, along with, I just choose to be colorblind. Well, that's easy for some people when they're not a target.
When they're not a target, or like we talked about previously, when someone that they know or is close to them isn't a target, it's real easy to just, you know, use that statement.
Yeah, I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, no, I think it did. I absolutely think it did.
Okay.
So kind of going off of that a little bit, what is something that you would want someone to take away from, you know, the work that you do or this conversation as it relates to anti-racism, DEI, and all of that stuff? If you could, you know,
yeah,
you know, it's hard to narrow it down to one thing, because there's so many important things, but...
I guess for one thing, everybody has a role to play. I think that sometimes there's still this them versus us, are like, well, there's the mainstream white folks over here, then there's all those other people, you know, and that I'm just a good person and I'm just going about my business, which is fine. It's it, but you have a role to play as well. And some of the roles that I just mentioned that are what we mentioned in this interview, you know, talking to your kids, reading a book. you know, changing up your routine instead of going to, you know, the normal everyday grocery store, go to a store in a completely different neighborhood that's run by Nigerians or something, you know, expose yourself to other people, because it's easy just to think the whole world is like what exists in your bubble.
Yep.
So that's one thing right off the bat I can think of.
I love that. Yeah, that's so great, because it really is. It's interesting and it can be really fun to go to. I mean, even like when you travel someplace to a different country, someplace you've never been before, to experience, you know, different culture, different food, different stores, like things are so different, and it's, you learn a lot, but it also, it's fun to see how, you know, people and places live and function differently than you do.
Well, and there's growth that comes out of that, because I think any growth, you know, if you look back on your own life, it's like your perspective changed when you went to college, when you got out of college, when you met a particular person, when you met that high school coach who really inspired you to be great. You know, there's, you have to allow yourself, though, to be part of this journey. And it's a never ending journey.
Yes.
That never ends, really.
Yep.
You know, you can always learn something new.
Yeah. And it's never a bad thing to learn something new.
Well, you can make informed decisions. I mean, if I'm going to, I mean, you live in upstate New York, you know, I mean, I could watch a documentary on upstate New York, but it's nothing like living in upstate New York. For me to say, well, I'm an expert on upstate New York because I saw this 30-minute documentary. Yeah. Well, that'd be ridiculous.
Yeah. Which is what a lot of people tend to do. They're like, oh, I saw this video and now I know everything.
And now I know exactly what it's like to live there.
Not quite.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, I always ask my guests if they have a favorite quote or inspirational message that resonates with them that they would like to share with the listeners. Do you have one?
Yeah, I have one from the late John Lewis. Congressman and civil rights activist and icon. Never let anyone, any person, or any force dampen, dim, or diminish your light.
I love that. That's a great one.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. All right. So before we go, where can people find you as far as social media? I don't know if you're still doing the podcasting thing.
Yeah, when I have time.
Anything like that.
This is a lot easier because I could just sit here and answer questions and having to actually put it together. They can go to kevinphenry.com. So it's, you know, the HTTP and then the www.kevinphenry.com. And then that's where they can find out about the things that I'm doing, as well as if they want to send me an email or stay in contact.
Awesome. And I will be sure to include that in the show notes for today's episode. Thank you again so much for joining me today. You know, this is one of those conversations that, while it was short right here, it's one that there's definitely a lot more to talk about, and, you know, something that we need to talk about amongst ourselves and with other people every day. So thank you very much again for joining me and for the work that you do.
Yeah, thank you very much.
I'd like to thank Kevin again for joining me and having this extremely important conversation. If you know me at all, you know that this is a topic and cause I am very passionate about. I understand that for some of us, it is difficult to understand something that we've never personally experienced. But I want to leave you with this thought. If you've ever been tempted to share something with someone or wanted to share something that you've been through, stop for a minute and think about how you would feel if the person you were sharing this with dismissed what you went through or minimized how you were feeling solely based on the fact that they've never experienced it themselves. Or what if they tried to tell you that your feelings about that situation weren't valid? Now I'd like you to really think about how that would make you feel. And I want you to remember how that feels to people who are constantly being brushed off when they share experiences about racism. The journey to becoming anti-racist isn't something that happens overnight, and there is always more to learn. I encourage you to put in the work. Do your research, utilize the resources that are available, and reach out to Kevin if you need guidance. All of his information is linked in the show notes for today's episode. Thank you all for listening, and remember, be kind to yourselves, be kind to each other, and be unapologetically you.